So, Danny, we are back for another episode of UEN Homeroom. How has your summer been going?
Yeah, even though teachers get summer off, we are here just working away, working, slaving away.
You know, I have to tell you, I do not agree with the old adage that the three best months of the year are June, July, and August. I feel like I've been working like a dog.
It's true. It does feel that way, but I am excited to get some pool time. We had kind of a slow start to summer this year, and now it is officially pool temperature.
Yeah, we kind of went from 60 and rainy to 95.
Yeah, 60 and rainy for like a solid 4 weeks.
But now we're back, and we're ready for another episode of UEN Homeroom.
Yeah, we are, even though the teachers may be recuperating or slaving away in their classes, as I know some teachers are. We are still putting out episodes, so let's wait for that bell.
So, Danny, today we're talking about building a positive culture at school. As you think about what culture means to you in education, what do you think of?
You know, I think of a lot of things. I think of faculty meetings is the first thing I think of when I think of culture. Because I think when you have all of your faculty together, that is one place you can tell. Do you have a good culture at your school or not?
That's true. I've often thought that when I walk into a building, you can tell culture pretty quickly through your interactions with people, as well as just kind of some of the things you observe in the halls themselves.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think you can sense the vibe when walking into a school building.
Well, today we're going to be talking about how a principal can impact school culture, and we'd like to welcome a special guest today. We've got Todd Craycroft from Oakwood Elementary. Welcome, Todd.
Well, thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So, Danny, let's find out a little bit about Todd as we kind of get started here. Todd Craycroft is originally from Salt Lake City. He actually attended Hillside Junior High as well as Highland High School.
Oh,
so he's an old Salt Lake City man.
Go Rams.
He attended the University of Utah and got his degree in English. But yet, Todd did not start in education. Todd actually spent 10 years as an investment advisor for Boettcher and Smith Barney. So he's kind of an alternative route to education, as it were. But eventually he returned to school and went to BYU to receive his teaching license.
Why would someone do that?
Because Utah didn't accept my BA in English. They said it had been 10 years.
So it was a second choice. It's fine.
Yeah. We'll take you as long as BYU was not your first choice. So after he finished his degree in education, Todd started teaching English at Valley Junior High. Now, here's a little trivia for you, Danny. Do you know the mascot of Valley Junior High?
I should, but I don't.
Think Napoleon Dynamite.
A liger?
They are the Valley Junior High Ligers.
Shut up. That's real?
That is totally real.
Amazing. New favorite school mascot.
Yeah. So while Todd was at Valley Junior High, he led the Shark program, which helped kids that were struggling and at risk. He also worked with a different population, teaching the gifted and talented English classes along with special education co-teaching. Eventually, Todd decided that he wanted to get into administration, and he received his master's degree in educational leadership at BYU. He spent the next few years interning and working as an assistant principal before becoming the principal at Morningside Elementary and Granite School District from 2013 to 2018. And most recently, Todd has been serving as the principal of Oakwood Elementary and Granite School District. Besides his work in education, Todd loves to ski, play tennis, run, bike, garden, and write songs with guitar accompaniment.
That's what I like to hear.
So we might say that Todd is a Renaissance man. And most importantly, we need to give a shout out to his wife, Marilee, their four children, and his 16 grandchildren.
16. That is impressive.
So, Todd, we are excited to have you be part of UEN Homeroom today.
Thank you. I welcome the opportunity.
All right, Todd. For a lot of people, this is the most stressful part of the podcast, but for some reason, I feel like this is going to be your favorite part of the podcast. So we ask everyone questions from Utah students to get to know you a little bit better, maybe more than what's just in your bio. Are you prepared for that?
Oh, boy. Inquiring minds want to know.
They do. Young inquiring minds have really good questions.
I'm ready.
Okay, here we go.
What day is harder, the first day of school or the last day of school?
For me, it's the last day of school. And I am a sentimental man, and I love kids. And when the kids leave, it's a little bit depressing, actually. When the void occurs, they're gone suddenly. It's not an easy time for me, but I get over it. I love summer just as much as anybody, I think. But, yeah, last day for sure.
Okay. Next question.
If you would be on every sports team, which one would it be?
Favorite sports team. That is whatever team my grandchildren are playing on. I have a lot of grandkids, and they're playing soccer and baseball and whatnot. But as far as a professional sport, I have to say I love the Green Bay Packers. And
Cheesehead.
I played a lot of football in my younger years.
Okay.
How did you get drawn into the Packers?
Bart Starr, who recently passed away. And that whole Vince Lombardi era was really important to me as I was an aspiring Little League football player and watching their success.
Very fun.
Okay, and one more question.
When you go to the zoo, what animal will you see first?
Oh, boy. Well, the one I'd like to see first are the polar bears. And I'm following Nora, the polar bear who broke her leg.
Right.
What?
And it's they do Facebook posts from time to time.
Is
and
this
show
the Pogel Zoo?
Yeah. They show the plate that they put into Nora's leg and how they're making her enclosure safe for her and her
can
progress.
She
can't get out yet.
Okay.
But it's been
a
few months.
I'm concerned about this polar bear now.
Me
I didn't
too.
Even know.
Oh, yeah. I'm totally into Nora. And
I had no idea this question would have such an impact on Danny.
I know. You guys.
Anyway, so that would be the one I'd like to see first. But, of course, when you walk in, it's usually the savanna, the giraffes, and all that stuff. But polar bears, number one.
Well, we enjoyed getting to know you a little better from the students around the state of Utah. Thanks, Todd.
Indeed. You did a good job.
Thank you very much.
If you were scared, you didn't show it.
Oh, well. Jared makes me very relaxed.
I've had
a lot of time with him.
Jared's such a calming influence on us all.
I'm glad this is being recorded right now.
He's like going to play that back to me next time I yell.
I'm going
to
be playing that at home tonight. Let's see if my kids feel the same way.
Tara does, definitely.
Okay. So today, Todd, we're talking a little bit about school culture. And as a principal, you have a huge impact on the vibe that happens within your school. Maybe just as we kind of get started, let's find out from you, how would you define a successful school culture? And maybe give us a sense of what that looks like.
You know, that's a great question. It's so complicated. The school culture can be obvious to some. As you said, when you walk into a school, you can pick up a vibe. But it's sometimes a little more difficult to really understand the tacit underpinnings of a school culture. And so a real successful culture, of course, is going to have high achievement. There'll be a growth mindset in all the faculty, and that'll spill over into the students and the parents. Of course, it's really important that everybody believe that kids can grow and that the effort they put in will actually render some success and that they can grow in intelligence. It's, I think, very important part of school culture that kids believe that they can grow in their own intelligence and that the effort they put in will yield some really great results. It's unfortunate that you might find a school culture where teachers use excuses to say that, well, their kids really can't grow in intelligence and ability, and that's unfortunate. So I think at the heart of a great school culture is that belief that children can grow in academics and intelligence, but also in character. And I think that character piece is sometimes overlooked because of the emphasis on testing and academics, but it's really an essential part of a culture. So everybody working together with parents, with faculty, with the administration, and of course you can't forget the staff, that front office, and the custodian. All of those people should have a positive attitude about the kids and realize that it's all about relationships. Achievement's important, but if you don't have a relationship with a child, the influence is not going to be there.
I love that.
And it's really vital. So from, you know, the sweepers all the way up to the administrator and everybody in between, there needs to be a real positive attitude about school and about student growth.
I like that you talked about that the teachers have to believe that everyone in the school can grow. And I think that's really important for a school building. It's not just about the scores. The scores will follow. But if every teacher, every staff member, everyone in that building believes that children can succeed, that's where a culture starts. I like that you put that first.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and one thing that I'll always say when I was in a public education building, if you want to have success as a teacher in a building, you better have a good relationship with the janitor and the head secretary.
Absolutely.
Because they make so much of what happens in a building run as far as the day-to-day operations. And so if you can have positive relationships with them and your colleagues, as well as the administration, man, you're going to have a positive relationship generally with most of the kids as well. That kind of translates.
I agree.
All right. So something that I've heard you're known for is your integration of music and arts and also the importance that you put on that. Where did that come from?
That's a great question. You know, I was thinking about that this morning as I was coming over here, and I thought about my first grade experience at Curtis Elementary. It was horrible.
Oh.
Miss Shu was a mean lady.
Miss Shu, you're naming names here.
I'm sorry.
I assume she's retired now, yes?
I have no idea where she lives now. She had a southern accent. She was so mean. I faked being sick almost every day the first month or two of school until my mother caught on and finally sent me to school and you know, forced me to go. I learned to read somehow that year, but in second grade, my teacher, bless her heart, Miss Helen Baxter, I'll never forget her, she realized that I had a talent for playing the ukulele and singing. And she had me rehearse with a bunch of girls who danced around on a stage as wind-up dolls. And I played Ain't She Sweet on the ukulele and sang for all the parents and the school to hear and see. And it was transforming for me. I loved school after that. And it was a very sensitive teacher, Miss Baxter, who was able to sense that this kid needed something. And, of course, I've been in school ever since, pretty much. There was that stint in business. But I can attribute my love of music and education, that edutainment part of what I do, to the roots with Miss Baxter. And then, of course, when I became an English teacher, reaching out to teach kids some of those difficult concepts and connecting them to literature became a real important focus for me. And so I wrote songs about grammar. I got a song for every part of speech. I got songs about The Hiding Place and The Witch of Blackbird Pond and The Education of Little Tree and that wonderful classic, To Kill a Mockingbird. And I wanted my kids not only to connect with the intellectual side of literature, but also the emotional side, and music can do that. Now, as a principal, I try and help my kids connect with the character development that goes on and should go on in school. And so a lot of the songs that I write now and share with students are about honesty and listening and being grateful and doing your very best. So for me, music is an essential part of education.
I love that. So your second grade teacher was able to reach out to you through a relationship and cultivate all of that.
She was an amazing lady, and I'll never forget her.
Well, and that's wonderful because you're going back to school culture saying that it's all about that relationship building, and that's what it took for you to take an interest in school and quit faking sick all the time.
So, Todd, tell us a little bit about how you use music. You talked about building character education with kids. I know for a fact, that having been around the school that you work at, that music is not just part of your weekly routine through announcements and different things, but you also use it as a motivator for kids, as you use it as a reward for kids who don't miss school, that they can come have singing time with the principal and some of these different things. Maybe share a little bit about your philosophy and how you integrate that.
Well, first of all, it's a very selfish thing because I am a teacher at heart, and I'm never happier than when I'm in the classroom. And so I do provide this incentive that you've brought up. If kids achieve a certain number of perfect days of attendance at my school, that means everybody's on time and everybody's present, and they accumulate 20 of those days, which may seem an easy thing when there's 180, but it's rather difficult for some classes to get there, just 20 days of perfect attendance. But if they do, then I will bring the guitar in and spend some time singing songs with the kids as a reward for being in class. And it seems to work. But as I said, it's kind of selfish for me because it really gets me into the classroom, and that's where I find the most joy.
Now, in addition, one other question I have about some of the songs that you've written. You mentioned how you did this as a curriculum teacher when you were teaching English. As a principal, I know you've been heavily involved in writing school songs. Maybe talk a little bit about the message that you try to convey to students through the lyrics that you develop in your school song.
Yeah, the first school song that I came up with, I collaborated with a school psychologist. He and I were talking about how important it is to be nice. Simple concept, but when executed effectively, can really help a school culture. And so Steve Prasad and I got together and we talked about being nice, and I thought, I'm going to go write a song. So the first song I wrote for Morningside Elementary, which we sang my first year as a principal, was Be Nice. Do not be cruel, but be nice. Happiness rewards all of us when we smile and we try to be nice. And it seemed to be the right song for that year. And certainly it established a tone for the culture of the school that was really positive.
All right. So since that year at Morningside, you've made other school songs. What's one that you're working on right now or that you use with students currently?
Last year at Oakwood, we sang every Friday morning, Do Your Best. And the Oakwood mascot are owls, and it is what it is. And so I've incorporated the owl into this song because you'll hear, do your best and be wise.
Ah, like an owl.
Like an owl is part of the lyric. So here we go. This is what we sang at Oakwood last year. Some may think that giving up is easier to do than working through the challenges that life may bring to you. Do your best and be wise. Don't let trouble get you down. Think it through. Work real smart. Build a smile from a frown. Give your all. Hunker down. We all learn to be victorious. Hang in there. We are bright and good and strong and fun and wise. Hang in there, owls. You're bright and good and strong and fun and wise.
I love that. How can you not smile when your principal is singing with a ukulele? That's magical.
Well, and think about the act of singing along as well. You know, so often we put posters on the walls or we do different things that may have an impact, right?
Yeah, if they read them.
But there's nothing about a song, especially one that has a catchy jingle.
Well, and it's about them.
It's about them, yeah.
It's not just some random song that we're singing, but it's made with those students in mind.
That's right.
I love it.
Let me just add the unifying power of that song. There have been times when kids were walking to gym, singing the song through the hallways, and the adults in the building would hear that. And sometimes it got a little emotional. You know, they were it was very touching. And then at the talent show at the end of the year, we all I had the whole student body there in the gym, and they all sang it together. And usually when we sing it, they're in their classrooms and they don't hear each other. But when 500 kids are singing a song, there's such a great unity, and that can really build a positive feeling about a school and a fidelity to the school that is rare. In our day and age, we don't see a lot of loyalty to institutions. And when you can build that kind of loyalty in a school, especially at the beginning of their educational experience, they're not going to just love subject matter. They're going to love school. And that means a lot.
Well, and that loyalty and that trust that they see you and with their principal. Because I think there are a lot of times where you might walk into a school and the kids might not know who the principal is because they don't get to connect with them in any ways. They may, if they have behavior issues, they may be dealing with an assistant principal. And, you know, if you're a good kid, you may not ever see the principal. So to build that loyalty and trust with an actual person in their building, I think that's amazing.
You know, Todd, I never told you this story, but one of the things I did the last year I was at Hunter High School, I was reading one day an article about homecoming at West High. And one of the things that West High used to do is they would bring the oldest living graduate that they could find to lead the school in the school song for homecoming. And the year that I was sharing this with my students, the woman was 103 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
It's amazing.
So at that moment, I said, all right, guys, let's hear the school song. You know, who can sing Hunter High's school song? Nobody could. I had cheerleaders in my room. I had SBOs.
Well, that's a disgrace.
I had people who really should have known the school song. And so I threw out the gauntlet. I said, we are going to learn the school song. We are going to sing it every day for the first 5 minutes of class. And the kids became attached to the school song. It became part of who they were. And I actually had kids tell me later, you know, years later, that that was the thing they remembered most about my class, is that I helped them to feel a sense of community for their school. And it kind of gave them that sense of identity, like you're talking about, where they all belong to the same community. So I just,
so
the power of a school song.
The Hunter High
well,
school
I can sing
song.
The Hunter school song, but I will not
what
do
about
that
the,
today.
What about the Cottonwood song? Do you know that?
This is embarrassing to admit that I have forgotten the Cottonwood
you
High school song.
You were SBO president, Jared Cavilli, and you cannot sing the Cottonwood High school song. You're
Here
on probation.
Here comes Cottonwood.
I can sing the Bountiful school song with actions. Thank you very much.
Well,
but
we're
I will
unfortunately
not
doing a video podcast today, but we would love to see that at some point.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, Todd, as we move into another question that I have for you, one of the signs that I've seen in your office is about trust. And I know that that's a key component for you as you try and build culture and relationships within your school. Maybe talk to us just a little bit about how trust plays such a key role in the mission and culture you're trying to create in your schools.
Yeah, I do have that the plaque up in my office that says trust is the most valuable thing. And I think that's very true, especially in education, when we're dealing with, of course, children whose parents are trusting us with their most precious possession in life. And so we need to be worthy of that trust. And there are different ways of building trust. Of course, as the authority in the building, the principal, there's that kind of trust. You know, people just need to trust that you're the man in charge. The buck stops with you. And I appreciate that. And it's important to me. But it rings hollow unless there is expertise and then relationships. And so the expertise trust and the relationship trust reinforce that authority trust and make that of substance so that they know that you're not just somebody there as a figurehead, somebody to tell them what to do or discipline the kids when they're naughty. You're a person who's looking to build a relationship to help them feel like they're being nurtured by everybody in the school. And so that's very important to me. And I think for some reason, one of the most important aspects of that is visibility, just being there and letting kids see you at recess or before or after school, waving to parents, opening the car doors and shutting the door when the kid gets in safely as the kid exits the building. Just being a part of the attendance program, as I talked about earlier with my rewards for 20 days of perfect attendance and the other things that I do. Pizza day for 50 days of perfect attendance is pretty cool. And there are a few classes that get there.
That's awesome.
So it's really important that we understand how to build trust. And One of the areas where I felt challenged when I first started as an elementary principal was in the area of expertise, because I knew a lot about good teaching and I knew a lot about secondary curriculum. But elementary curriculum, even though I'd been through elementary school years and years and years before, had changed dramatically. And so the way they teach math now is so much different than the way I learned math. The algorithm method has been replaced with manipulatives and with trying to teach kids how to think mathematically and not just know how to do an algorithm. So there were some challenges there, but I've worked really hard to understand what teachers are teaching. And, of course, the other part of this is understanding that the paradigm shift needs to be there between from hoping that the teachers teach something to hoping that the teachers have taught it effectively so that kids learn something. And the big paradigm shift in my educational experience over the last decade or so has been focusing on student learning and not, did I teach it? You know, that question is not the key question anymore. The question is, did the kids learn it? And so as teachers do that job effectively, as I do my job effectively, trust is built in expertise as well as the other areas.
Now, tell me just a little bit about your experience going to a new school, because you've been a principal at two different schools now. Last year was your first year with a new faculty for you. They all have relationships with each other. A lot of them have been working there for a long time. How was that experience trying to come in and build that relationship with a brand new faculty for you?
Well, I have to say that is it's really challenging. But one of the things that helped lubricate that move was my sense of humor. And I remember my first meeting with the faculty at my new school, Oakwood, and I decided to read some of the first grade thank you notes that they had given me from Morningside Elementary. And I read one of the notes that was scribbled in crayon to the faculty at Oakwood. And I said, this kid said, "Dear Mr. Craycroft, you're the best principal ever. Do you like beer?" And I thought, well, why did that kid ask that question? Maybe it's because I am so happy in my job that I walk around looking a little intoxicated.
Strong relationship of trust with that kid.
But it got a good laugh from that first meeting. We were having
good
breakfast.
Icebreaker.
And it helped them understand a little bit that I'm a human, that I love my job. There were other notes that I read also. And I think just that third-party reference helped a lot to break the ice. And then go about really showing that those teachers at the new school, that I really cared about them and met with each one, talked to them individually about their goals at school, but also a little bit about their life, and remembering that all these teachers come to school struggling with something. There's not a one who doesn't have some kind of challenge in their life, and yet they show up with a smile every day and do an amazing job. So that kind of empathy helped a lot as I tried to break through the ice of a new school.
Well, and I think with your sense of humor, with the empathy that you're trying to show the faculty, and then your willingness to be an instructional expert, and especially where you were coming from, a different world as a secondary English teacher, to come and be the lead learner and to be the instructional expert in the school and show your willingness to continue learning, I think that does a lot to build trust within a new faculty.
I agree.
All right. Just wrapping up our talk on school culture and building connections, is there any stories that stick out to you where music has really made a difference for a particular group of students or for a faculty?
When I was teaching junior high English at Valley Junior, I was involved in a program called SHARC, Schools Helping At-Risk Kids. And we had four teachers that were particularly good at relationships. We brought kids into the class who had been struggling. And we brought a kid, Marty, into our English class. I taught not only English but geography. And Marty had a zero GPA. He'd failed every class his first quarter. So we brought Marty in and tried to connect with not only his academic motivation, but just his personal life. And I found out he played guitar. And, of course, I play guitar. And so we voted. We had him come in. And he played his guitar in the class, and I played with him, and we sang songs. Somehow, like Helen Baxter did for me when I was in second grade, we connected with Marty. Marty improved dramatically. He had it in him all the time. He was bright. He was capable. But he just hadn't connected emotionally with the work and had no motivation as a result. But he went from a zero GPA to a 4.0 GPA that year.
It's incredible.
He received the Outstanding Science Student of the Year Award from Mr. Reed, the science teacher. And it was really great to see that somehow we could connect his personal life to school again.
Right.
And it made a huge difference in Marty's life.
What a great moment in a story about paying it forward for you.
Yeah. And I have written songs that are a little bit about that. I'd like to share just this last one, Good Choices Make Dreams Come True, just one verse of that in the chorus. When I do this at school, I record my granddaughters who have really sweet elementary school voices. So that also helps connect with the school. So here we go. This is Good Choices Make Dreams Come True. I've seen a lot of kids faced with a big choice to learn, grow, play guitar, practice their singing voice. Some quit before they know how great they can become. They only see the dark at night and not the morning sun. Choices make us who we are. Good choice propels us like a shooting star. I'll be free to make my dreams come true. Strong enough to help you too.
Thank you so much for that, Todd. Yeah,
thank you for bringing that.
So, Danny, do you want to give our audience a tech tip today?
I mean, do we have to?
Well, I mean, this is a podcast kind of about technology.
I'm tired. Do you have a tech tip for today?
I mean, I guess if I have to, I can come up with one.
I mean, okay, Jared, I have a really good lazy teacher or lazy presenter, in my case, tech tip.
Are you sure you want to do this during your summer break?
I'm sure. I'm 100% sure about it. It's amazing, and I think some teachers are going to love it.
Great.
So I am notorious for leaving my things and stuff everywhere. I will leave...
Not you.
I will leave a cord in Duchesne County, my MiFi down in Iron County, and my clicker at my desk when I have to go present. And sometimes if you've used a remote clicker that you plug into the USB, you have to be at the right angle. Or if you're at the back of the room, It doesn't work and it's obnoxious. So there is a Google extension called Remote for Slides, and it works specifically with Google Slides. And then it turns your phone into a clicker. So you download it on your iPhone, or you just go to the website on an iPhone. I guess if you use an Android, there's an app for it. You install the extension onto Google Slides, and then you say present with that, and it gives you a little code to put in, and bam, your phone is now your remote. It connects through the interwebs, so anywhere in the room, it works. And it's just two big buttons on your phone. I feel like a magician. You're welcome.
So, Danny, what happens now that instead of leaving your clicker, you leave your phone behind?
Well, that will never happen. But in that case, I don't know, like you sound an alarm, or I go hide in a really dark room until someone gives it back to me.
Well, the remote is awesome, and I know that's something that a lot of teachers will be able to use.
Oh, yeah. When I, at the presentation that I was at where I forgot my clicker and, you know, figured out the solution in 10 minutes, I shared it with the teachers that were there, and they loved it. All right. So Todd's amazing.
Yeah. I had the privilege of being an intern for him last semester, and it was very influential on my life, not just about classroom management and being a principal and all those things, but as you can see, he is an expert on building culture.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about all the things that we're doing when we're learning about leadership and when we're learning about building a culture at a school, and he's done it in a way that's authentically him. And I think that's really important, is that's who he is, and he's using it in a way to build culture and relationships and loyalty and trust at his school. I think it's fantastic.
There's no question that he embodies that old adage that no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care.
Look at you. That was awesome.
Yeah. Confucius and Jared say.
All right, everyone. Thanks for joining us. And I think I hear a ukulele playing us out this time.
Be wise, everyone.
I'm in your podcast. I hope that your audience lasts.
I love it.